everyone. Caitlin and I are continuing to take turns featuring the anti-racism educational resources we are engaging with each month. Because we believe education leads to open hearts and free voices that are empowered to speak up and fight for change. Our hope is that you will find these resources useful for your education and that they will also help you cross the threshold into doing active anti-racism work so that we can create an equitable world together. We love you all. Black Lives Matter. This month, I am reading Stop Being Afraid, 5 Steps to Transform Your Conversations About Racism, a workbook by Dr. Amanda Kemp, who is the founder of Racial Justice from the Heart. Here is the official description of Stop Being Afraid. Stop Being Afraid shows you how to have conversations about systemic racism. People of color will find useful tips to avoid exhaustion, and white people for Black lives can move beyond white guilt and shame of race to have a voice for racial justice. Designed for people who feel like they should be doing more, this book gives you a step-by-step guide on how to 1. Stay calm, 2. Listen to others, 3. Speak your truth, 4. Take care of yourself so that you don't get burnt out. Grounded in a mindful self-compassion, Stop Being Afraid prepares you to have difficult conversations about racism at home, work, and in your faith community. You can find the link to Stop Being Afraid in the show notes, where you can also find the link to Racial Justice from the Heart, where you can find out more about their fantastic workshops.
Welcome to the Full Heart, Free Voice Podcast. I'm Emma Veritas. I'm a writer and writing coach for women who want to start writing. And I'm a teacher for women who want to find their true selves again.
And I'm Caitlin Bosshart, a life coach for the multi-passionate at heart and wedding coach for couples planning non-traditional weddings. We read books that inspire you to live with a full heart
and a free voice. Hey everyone, before we get started with today's episode, we have a fun announcement for you. So Caitlin and I have recently opened up our affiliate shop. Our affiliate shop is a library of resources by Clarissa Pinkola Estes, and you can find it at wildauthenticity.com/podcast shop. And when you go there, you'll find a list of links to Women Who Run With the Wolves, but also to all of Clarissa Pinkola Estes's audio classes that she's done through Sounds True. And when you buy these through these links, you support Clarissa Pinkola Estes, you support Sounds True, which is a very cool independent publisher, and you support our podcast because Sounds True has a very generous and amazing affiliate percentage that they give to us whenever you buy something. So it's this beautiful win-win-win, and it's also an opportunity for you to dive deeper into these educational resources. And so I just wanted to ask Caitlin today, Caitlin, what is one thing you have loved about listening to Clarissa Pinkola Estes's audio classes?
Well, I think it's, you know, when we are diving in so intimately with her work, and in a way it's like, I don't know about you, but there's been times I'm like, oh, it's Clarissa Pinkola Estes. Like there's a little bit of this, like, I don't know, she's like ethereal, I think, in some ways in my mind and in this, but you know, there was something that was so nice is, you know, when I listen to her audios, I get to hear her voice and I get, there's like a sense of her heart and her intention that comes through in a way that, you know, now that I've listened to her voice and how she tells these stories, when I'm reading, I hear her, like her tone and how she kind of explains things. And it gives me a different level of understanding, I think, of the way that she is expressing her ideas and her thoughts and her wisdom. And so that's been one of the coolest things, that it's just like another level of kind of getting to know this author that we are engaging with so intimately and learning from.
And there's a class I want to tell you about today called In the House of the Riddle Mother. Every night of our lives, we experience between 5 and 7 dreams, each reflecting our most intimate passions and conflicts. Dr. Clarissa Pinkola Estes compares each one to a riddle. Once solved, it can provide a surprising answer to an unresolved question buried within the psyche. On In the House of the Riddle Mother, Estes surveys the most common archetypal patterns women experience while dreaming. Based on 20 years of work, this audio seminar is a dense, poetic storehouse of information about the dream life of women. We invite you to go to wildauthenticity.com/podcast shop and click on our special link to purchase this class. Thanks, everyone. Welcome to our book club study of Women Who Run With the Wolves, where we are talking about Chapter 13, Battle Scars, Membership in the Scar Clan. This chapter is an exploration of shame and focuses on the pain of keeping secrets bottled up and on the powerful healing that can come from sharing our secrets with a trusted person so we can move from isolation to becoming a member of the Scar Clan. This chapter is for you if you feel isolated and lonely because you feel like no one could really ever understand what you've been through. It's for you if you keep your pain bottled up without sharing it with others. It's also for you if you want to find a simple path to move past the shames in your life. In the chapter, Dr. Estes offers a teaching story about secret shames called The Woman with the Hair of Gold. Once again, this is a short story, only a few paragraphs long. So instead of doing a retelling like I normally do, I'm going to read this one straight from the book. And as with so many of these old fairy tales we've been reading, there is violence in this story. So if you want to skip the reading, you can move ahead a couple minutes after this music stops. And remember, we will absolutely be reading this through a metaphorical lens. So here is The Woman with the Hair of Gold, read from Woman Who Run with the Wolves by Dr. Clarissa Pinkola Estes. There was a very strange but beautiful woman with long golden hair as fine as spun gold. She was poor and without mother or father, and lived in the woods alone, and wove upon a loom made of black walnut boughs. A brute, who was the son of the coal burner, tried to force her into marriage, and in an effort to buy him off, she gave him some of her golden hair. But he did not know or care that it was spiritual, not monetary, gold that she gave him. So when he sought to trade her hair for merchandise in the marketplace, people jeered at him and thought him mad. Enraged, he returned by night to the woman's cottage and killed her with his hands and buried her body by the river. For a long time, no one noticed that she was missing. No one inquired of her hearth or health, but in her grave, the woman's golden hair grew and grew. The beautiful hair curled and spiraled upward through the black soil, and it grew looping and twirling more and more and up until her grave was covered by a field of swaying golden reeds. Shepherds cut the curly reeds to make flutes, and when they played them, the tiny flute sang and would not stop singing. Here lies the woman with golden hair, murdered and in her grave, killed by the son of the coal burner because she wished to live. And that is how the man who took the life of the woman with golden hair was discovered and brought to justice so that those who live in the wild woods of the world, like we ourselves do, were safe again once more. Dr. Estes explains that this story is a metaphor for the secret shames we keep. So many times there are things we are ashamed of from our past, or there are experiences that our family, religion, or culture taught us to never share about ourselves. Because if we did, then maybe everyone would see how horrible we really are. But the thing is, these secrets, even if we've buried them deep, have a way of resurfacing. Dr. Estes says this is the way of the wild woman. Because the wild woman is always moving us towards healing and personal growth, and keeping secret shames can actually cause harm to the psyche. In the chapter, she says this: "The keeping of secrets cuts a woman off from those who would give her love, succor, and protection. It causes her to carry the burden of grief and fear all by herself, and sometimes for an entire group, whether family or culture. Further, as Jung said, keeping secrets cuts us off from the unconscious. Where there is a shaming secret, there is always a dead zone in the woman's psyche, a place that does not feel or respond properly to her own continuing emotional life events or to the emotional life events of others." But Dr. Estes says this isn't a hopeless experience, because there is a path to healing. And in the chapter, she explains that the healing is for us to share our secrets with at least one trusted person, a person who can listen with a full heart and understanding, but who can also stand with you without collapsing. Then allow yourself to grieve what needs to be grieved in a clean and whole way, so that you can move from the isolation that shame creates and become a part of the Scar Clan, which is really all women who have been to hell and back again. In our conversation today, Caitlin and I will be talking about what it's felt like for us in the past when we've held on to shame and become isolated with those secrets. And then in the second part of our conversation, we'll talk about the healing experiences we've had when we've opened up and shared with others. And also, I just want to let you know that we're not going to be diving deep and telling you all of our secret shames on this episode. So this is really where we just want to talk about what it feels like, what the experience can be like. Like when you feel ashamed of something and you keep that bottled up. And also the examples we give today will probably be smaller examples, like smaller things that we've gone through. And I just want you to know that we've absolutely gone through bigger things, had those bigger life experiences. But we're also interested in exploring how sometimes even small experiences can get stuck and can impact your psyche and impact your life in damaging ways, and how good it is to kind of break free from those in the end. Okay, so Caitlin, I'm just wondering if you have an example for us of an experience when you've kept shame a secret and what that was like for you.
Yeah. So first, I just want to clarify for our listeners, when she's talking about these secrets that we keep, she's not talking about those little, like sort of mischievous, you know, kind of keep them to yourself, kind of those fun, almost, I don't know why this word is coming up, but those like fun, flirty secrets or something.
Yes.
That you just, you know, that it kind of feels good to know, like, you know, I'm the only one who knows this and it's fun. That's not the type of secrets that she's talking about. She's talking about those secrets that are these secrets that we are so afraid to tell someone else because of some either real or imagined consequence. Whether that's, you know, the judgment that we might get. And it's this deeply felt shame around, you know, it's like, so I'll just, you know, give the example that Brené Brown gives around, you know, shame versus guilt. And I think that can really also help kind of set up this conversation where, you know, guilt is like, you know, I did something bad, versus shame is like, I am bad. Something about who I am at my core. There's something wrong with who I am. And so that's the type of secrets that we're talking about, that really when we keep them inside of us, you know, it's like that, she uses that analogy of something sort of like a stone stuck under the skin that really begins to fester and is dangerous for us in a lot of ways and kind of ripples out in, you know, maybe direct or indirect ways. So for me, this might actually sound kind of like a silly secret, but it's actually something that was incredibly disruptive for me as a child. So when I was a kid, I used to go to this in-home daycare. And when I was playing outside, I would often be sort of rooting around in the dirt and exploring every little corner of this yard. And on two separate occasions, I found two things that really sparked my imagination. The first was a little tiny padlock. And I, at the time, was absolutely obsessed with keys and locks, probably because of the Secret Garden, and just had this total affinity for them. And I just thought that locks were magical. So when I found this little tiny padlock, which was really truly nothing special, I got so excited and was like, I felt like I found this treasure. So this was something that was like in the back corner of my babysitter's yard, and I was sort of taken with it. And so I decided to put this little thing in my pocket and took it home with me. And then on another occasion, I was also in the backyard and found this rock about the size of your hand that to me, in my imagination, looked like a whale's tooth. Mm-hmm. And this is also at a time where I was obsessed with all things whales and dolphins. And so I ended up, you know, sneaking this rock into my bag and taking it home, again, feeling like I had found this treasure. Well, I was probably 5 or 6, and I was definitely at the age where I knew that it was not okay to take something without asking. And I felt so much guilt that I had done this, that, oh my gosh, I can't even tell you the number of nights that I lay awake in my little bed, staring at the ceiling, and just feeling so incredibly guilty and afraid of what was going to happen if anyone found out that I had done this, and, you know, what was going to happen to me. And nothing was going to happen to me. I would have probably, my parents would have had a conversation and made me return it and apologize. Mm-hmm. But this was this massive secret that I will be honest that I, from the time that I was 5 or 6 years old, kept kind of holding within my body until I was a teenager. And I remember having these things stashed away in my closet. And if my parents would be, you know, in my closet for some reason, I would be so nervous that they would come across them and know what I had done. And my mom is going to be listening to this and probably laughing and be like, what? Because I'm a kid who had collected all sorts of things. She wouldn't have known this rock from any other rock or that padlock from any other random piece of, I don't know, whatever that I had picked up. But I remember as I found this rock, and I remember like almost like carrying it outside and like putting it in the garden. But I kind of did it in this like secret way, because I also didn't want my parents to be like, what are you doing with that rock? Like, why are you? But it was this like feeling of just like, you know, it sounds so silly, but I mean, the amount, how disruptive this was for me. Mm-hmm. And how I felt like I was a bad person. Mm-hmm. And just trying to wrap my little brain around it. And then how, as even older, as I got older, how I still carried that with me. And I still even get nervous a little bit sharing this story. So yeah, so that's my sort of, you know, probably lowercase s shame, but still. Yeah. How it has followed me for years and years.
Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the most interesting things is, because it doesn't seem to be about, and tell me where I'm wrong. Like, as I listen to you, it's like, it's about the event of taking these home, but it also feels like it isn't, like something bigger was going on inside yourself. It was like about what you made it mean about yourself, mm-hmm. that you had taken and carried these things home when you knew. You know, at the time you knew like, hey, I shouldn't be taking things from other people's houses. And so I'm really curious because, you know, she was talking about those dead zones and those impacts to the psyche. And I'm just really interested to hear you say more about what you made it mean and how that meaning like kind of felt in your body. If you could explore that a little more, that would be amazing.
Oh, yeah. So I made it mean that I was not a good person. Mm-hmm. And this was a time where I had different adults in my life that, you know, were sharing different perspectives about religion and beliefs around what happens to good people and to mm-hmm. bad people. And it was around this time that someone had told me, you know, if you're not a good little girl, you're going to go to hell.
Mm.
Ooh. Yeah. Like that just like put like just chills through my body. And that also, oh my gosh, the number of nights that I cried and was so afraid that, oh my gosh, I've done this bad thing. That means I'm going to hell.
Mm.
And mm-hmm. so that was the connection, you know, that I made. And then also kind of feeling like, you know, if my parents knew, like the social consequence or like the safety consequences, like if my parents know that I did this mm-hmm. and that I'm this bad person, will they on some level, and I don't think that my brain was totally thinking these things, but as an adult, think there was like, am I going to be sort of like rejected and loved less because mm-hmm. I did this bad thing, that they would be disappointed in me and think less of me as their child. You know, it's such, you know, it really gets its kind of hooks in.
Right.
And for me, I had a lot of anxiety as a kid and remember that feeling of just feeling sort of sick to my stomach a lot, and my stomach would be flipping all the time and just feeling very, just so anxious and nervous. And that was really the feeling that this gave me. And it also was this feeling of like major contraction of truly like hiding this thing because it was so bad in my mind
right.
that if anyone knew about it, you know, I wasn't going to be safe in some way.
Right. Oh, see how it like, even though it's a small thing and thinking about 5-year-old Caitlin being so sweet, like I'm imagining you in your bed looking up at the ceiling and I'm like, what a sweet freaking little girl.
Surrounded by 100 stuffed animals, like all the way around my head, down the sides of my body.
Really worried. What have I done?
Totally.
I just think, oh my gosh, so sweet. Like what a sweet, and also it makes me think like, what a good person, because you were like really worried about that. It sounds so genuine and sweet. So like listening to you tell this story, it's like imagining you, I just have all this like love for little Caitlin.
I do too. I like have so much compassion for that little girl.
Oh my gosh. And then I also think like, I obviously can really relate to the going to hell worry with all my religious baggage too. And I just think like, isn't that a lot? Like the culture just puts a lot on us. Like what a thing to take on as a kid, as so many of us do that grew up with that idea of hell. I just think like, what a burden for a little girl to carry and walk around with, this idea that you might go to hell. And then of course, that's why we keep our secrets. We're like, well, my God, does this mean this huge, horrible thing is going to happen to me? I can't tell anybody about this. You know, it just makes so much sense that we bottle it up, the way how culture kind of puts this like weight on such little sweet things that we do as kids.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, what this also reminds me of is, you know, another situation that I had as an adult, that I was working in a you know, pretty unhealthy environment. And I remember at that time, and I know I've talked a lot about this job and things that have kind of come up with this, but I felt like at the time I was just doing what I thought was the very best thing for my clients and the agency. And I had a supervisor reflect back to me and give me some very harsh criticism. She really attacked my character, saying that, you know, that I was, you know, just intentionally causing, you know, problems, and that I was manipulative and ill-intentioned and all of that. And again, it was this like feeling of like, oh my gosh, like I'm not a good person. I'm not the person that I think I am. And I could, even as an adult, I could still separate a little bit of, okay, this is this person saying these things, but I remember having this moment of like, oh my gosh, I've never had someone say these things to me and reflect these things. Maybe this is the first person who's ever been truly honest. And I've had this fear of telling and sharing this experience with some of my friends because I was afraid that they were going to say, oh yeah, that's totally how you are. Like, confirm it. Like, I don't want this to be true.
Right.
About who I am. I didn't see myself that way. But how, you know, that same type of fear can carry over in these other situations. But it's kind of the same core fear and belief that connects even, you know, both of those situations.
Yeah. And like wanting to keep it hidden and be like, oh my God, she discovered my secret.
Right. It's like, I've been able to hide this from everyone else, but she's the one who saw through it. It's like, doesn't it just make you kind of like sick to your stomach sometimes to like tell these stories?
Yeah.
Whew. Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it gives me the shivers. Well, I have to say, before we wrap up your side of it, I want to share that I have my little thing that I stole when I was a kid too.
Oh my gosh, please share.
Okay. So when I was little in elementary school, from our school library, I had checked out and read the book Frog and Toad Are Friends by Arnold Lobel. And I freaking loved that book. I loved it so much. I had like an insane amount. I can still feel it in my heart. My heart just like, boom, like burst open. And I'm like, I just loved the feel, like physically the book, like the feel of it. And I loved the characters. I loved Grumpy Toad. He was so funny. And this is like one of my favorite books. And so I checked it out and then I never, ever returned it. And no one ever found out. Like, the librarian never asked me about it. Nothing ever happened. But oh my God. Like, I was a library kid. Like, I spent so much time in our public library growing up and in the school library. Like, I was obsessed with libraries. They were kind of my safe zone, you know, the place I could go that I just felt belonging and welcome. And I loved the library. And so not returning a library book really was like the same thing. I felt so bad all the time. And aww, I would see it, you know, it's like one of those like object associations where you'd see it and you'd like have that striking feeling in your heart. Like, I've totally done this. But also I loved it and couldn't return it. But then when I was in high school, me too, like it stayed with me to high school. And finally I checked it back into my high school library. Like, I couldn't even deal with the whole thing. I just like dropped it in my high school library return box.
I know, it's like, you have to sneak it out. We have to get rid of the evidence.
And I think like probably the same things, like it was bad. Like, of course it, and it was, right? Like, I shouldn't have never returned the library book. But then the story I made of that was so much bigger than the circumstance. Like, the shame of it was bigger.
So what was that story for you?
I think it was probably the same story. Like, I was bad. Like, I did a bad thing. This is bad. You know, just I had that probably also from religion. I remember another book story growing up. So this probably, I think, relates. So I'm going to tell this story where in my religion growing up, it was Christian and like born again Christian. And there was this a real heavy focus that you shouldn't love anything more than Jesus. So like, Jesus was what you had to love the most or you would go to hell. That's like high stakes for loving Jesus more than anything else in your life. And so I was constantly tracking, do I love this more than Jesus? Do I love this more than Jesus? Do I love this more than Jesus? You know, like constantly tracking and making sure I didn't love anything more than Jesus. And then when I was 16, I read Jane Eyre. And I read it and I got to the last page and I closed the book and I was like, oh my God, I love this more than Jesus. Like, aww. I loved Jane Eyre so much. I like closed the book and put it back on my shelf and just didn't pick it up again until I was in my 20s and, you know, feeling more comfortable. But I literally, the book, the thing I loved the most, I put away and just like refused to look at.
Right. So that's so interesting that, well, one, how overwhelming that must have been for you as a kid to always, and growing up, to be like, always checking in, mm-hmm. and be like, well, what does this mean about me? Mm-hmm. And then feeling like you have to deprive yourself really of this thing that you love. Ugh.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting with like Frog and Toad that I never just asked for the book for Christmas or something. And I was like, hey, can I have this book for Christmas? Like there are so many other solutions. But I think once something spirals into that shame place, it's like what she talks about, like it impacts your psyche. It impacts your emotions. Things begin to freeze. And it's like, I couldn't see any other solutions.
Right.
Like my only solution for Frog and Toad was to keep the book and feel ashamed about it. My only solution for Jane Eyre was to put it away and never read it again. And like never tell anyone about that, you know, never share it. And I think like that's what happens with these small, like I know we're talking about things that seem small, but they really feed into these bigger things going on that can impact your life. And that, like, for me, it's like, I didn't have any other creative solution, even though, but if I had told someone, they probably would have been like, oh, here's what you do about that, right? Like a clean mind of a trusted person who isn't having the same kind of intense psyche triggers as you really can make all the difference. And so we're going to get into that with the second part of our conversation. But first, we're going to do our special segment where Caitlin and I tell you what we're up to, what we have going on, because we are both highly multi-passionate people with tons of stuff going on, and we would love for you to join us in all the interesting things we have going. So that's what we're going to do next. Okay, so Caitlin, what do you have going on this month?
Okay, so I know that last time I was telling you all about this new offer that I have that was in the works, and I wasn't sure if it was going to be available yet. Well, it is officially launched. I'm really, really excited. So I'm calling this the activation session. And so this is a special session that is all for multi-passionate creatives to help you unlock your creative process. And so what this session does will help you understand the intricacies of how you best tackle projects. It will give you tools and insights into how to avoid pitfalls like procrastination, burnout, you know, having a lack of clarity of, you know, where your project's going, and instead fuel your creative process so that you can find a sense of flow and ease. And the amazing thing about this too is, you know, when you learn how to honor your unique process and your natural tendencies, you'll actually begin to use your time more effectively instead of feeling like you're spinning your wheels. And, you know, and I don't know about you, but I know this has been true for me in the past. You know, instead of spending all of this time, you know, beating myself up about, you know, not doing things right, I learned about what my process is and how to lean into that instead using all of that energy that I used to spend in this negative way to really put all that into bringing my passion projects to life. And that is what this session has helped people do. So here's what the activation session actually includes. So it's a 90-minute one-on-one intensive coaching session with me. You'll get a recording of the session that you can listen to as many times as you want. And I always actually recommend that people do that because new insights will always come up as you dive back into this information. The core of this session is to do an in-depth reading of your Colby A index assessment results, which is included in the price of this session. And you'll get an integration guide with follow-up exercises and prompts that I've created to help you integrate everything that you've learned during this session into your everyday life. So this is for you if you want to quickly deepen your understanding of your creative process, if you want to gain insight into who you are as a creative and how you naturally take action so that you can immediately apply all of this information to your passion projects. And this is also for you if you're ready to stop fighting against yourself and instead putting that energy into bringing your amazing ideas into the world. I'm only going to be offering a limited number of these each month. It's going to change month to month just based on, you know, what I've got going on. But if this really resonates with you, I highly recommend going ahead and just snagging your spot for this month or hopping on the waitlist for next month's sessions. And you can find out all the information and purchase your activation session at caitlinbosshart.com/activation session. So I'm super excited about this. It's just been really fun to dive in with people. This is actually a session that has been part of my long-term one-on-one coaching program, but I realized that this insight is so valuable that I wanted it to be accessible to more people, and so that people can get their hands on this information right away and be able to just dive in with all their passion projects. Because as you guys all know, I'm obsessed with you bringing your ideas into the world because I really believe that we need them. So again, if you're interested, please reach out and let's unlock your creative process.
Yay, Caitlin, I'm so excited that this offer is up and running. And I just know people will get so much out of it. It's so good.
Thank you. It's so fun that it's finally live in the world. Okay, so switching over to you, what do you have going on that you want us all to know about?
Yeah, so I'm kind of in the same place where the membership site that I was talking about in our last episode is now also officially launched and available for folks to join. So, and I did change the name though. So I love kind of doing these monthly check-ins because you can see how we tweak our creative processes as we go along. I think Wild Woman is all about that flexibility and adaptability. Previously, this is what I was calling the First 10 Blog Post Society, and now this is called the Courageous Blogger Society, because that is really the result we're looking at. The society is for women who really have a message, like you have something to say, something you want to put out there in the world. You genuinely want and desire to share this message online, on the internet. You want to write, you know, you have this deep desire, but you are scared. It's kind of terrifying to put stuff out on the internet at first because the internet's like, who knows, right? There, that not everyone is nice. Like everyone gets to respond how they respond. Like all this stuff can come up that can stop you from pursuing this thing you genuinely want to do. So in Courageous Blogger Society, we're really looking at helping you develop the confidence and the courage to own your voice, to claim your unique point of view, and to really say like, hey, you know what? This message is meaningful. And there are people who will be helped by it. Like the women in the society are women who really want to inspire, teach, and help others, and they are writers. Writing is part of their soul. They must write, you know, in order to feel sane and good in their life. So what you get when you join is a community and connection with kind, wonderful, really cool women like you, women who want to inspire, heal, and help others, who want to write, but who are scared. And so you get this community connection and belonging and understanding of what it is that you're going through with this desire to write and hit publish on the internet. You also get access to online courses and masterclasses and workbooks. Right now, I'm releasing every week a lesson in the First 10 Blog Posts online course. So you can really go through this roadmap to help you write your first 10 blog posts. And then every quarter, something new will be up in the online portal, a new resource to help you to heal and to write your blog. And then you also get ongoing writing and coaching workshops every new and full moon. We're doing writing and coaching workshops. And then after every new and full moon, we do writing challenges in our group. But we are all about adding in motivation to help you write. But we are a group who keeps the pressure low because the women in our group really take things at their own pace. They have their own creative process. It's like you were talking about, Caitlin, like everyone does stuff differently. And so there's a lot of room for you to do things your way and to really celebrate that, like celebrate how you go about your creative life. And so when you join, you're just going to get a ton of community a ton of support. You're going to have fun with writing and getting your work out there in the world. And you're also going to get just some practical tips of how to blog, how to write online, how to show up in these ways. So it's super deep, super rich membership. And when you join, you also get a 7-day free trial. So you can try us out risk-free. You can join anytime. The page is wildauthenticity.com/courageousbloggerssociety, and blogger has an S at the end, but the link to that is also in the show notes. So we would love for you to come over to join Courageous Bloggers Society and to just check it out and see if what's there would really work for you, would be the solution to your problem with trying to get your voice out there into the world. And this is all about healing the voice, owning the voice, and claiming your truest self and being able to shine that out into the world.
Oh my gosh, that just sounds so amazing, Emma. I just want to celebrate for a minute because this is, you know, I feel like this is something that especially women don't do enough, is I feel like we don't celebrate each other and ourselves enough. And so I just want to celebrate us for putting these things out into the world. And I want to celebrate all the other people and all the other women. I want you, everyone who's listening, to take a moment to just celebrate even one small thing, even if it feels small to you. It's a big deal to do anything in the world where you're showing up in, you know, an authentic and creatively expressed way, whether that's using your voice, your, you know, writing words on a page, whether it's artwork, whether that's like bucking societal whatever, just to do what you want to do. So yeah, let's just celebrate us for just half a second. We deserve way longer than that, but
I totally agree. It's, I know, even like what we're talking about today with Scar Clan, it's like we're a community of women, and it is hard to put our voices out there. There's like intergenerational habits and culture and traumas that would stop women from really saying like, hey, this is who I am. Hey, this is what I believe. And I'm going to actually take up space in the world with that. And to really go through the healing of that process and being able to do this, it really is. It's a victory. It's worth celebrating, but it's also like, holy crap. You know, look what we're doing. And I do think it's amazing.
All right. So diving back into our book club discussion. And the second part of this is really about that experience of finally sharing a shameful secret that you've held inside your body and letting someone else know and showing that vulnerability to another person and what that's like. And so let's start with you, Emma. I would love to hear what that experience has been like for you when you finally shared something that you've kept hidden away for a long time.
Yeah. So I would say I have had this experience a lot. So in my healing journey, you know, I grew up hard childhood, lots of shame, lots of secrets that I just like big and small that I kept hidden. And then I'd say in my later 20s, that's when I first read Women Who Run With the Wolves and found that reflection of, oh, this is stuff I've been through. This is stuff that's come up for me. So I'd say the first time of really feeling like truly understood was that first time I read Women Who Run With the Wolves and felt like, okay, I'm not alone, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's more people out there in the world going through all of this than just me. And then through my 30s, I've had therapists, I've done 12-step programs, I've had life coaches. So I've had all of these opportunities to kind of take those leaps and get this stuff off my back and to find freedom. And what I would say that she says in the book is she talks about finding a trusted person. And I think who you share your secrets with is extremely important. And I talk about this actually a lot in my work with bloggers, because like when someone writes and they have work that they want to have someone review, I always tell them not to pick like a person in their life who has historically criticized them or who has been a wet blanket on their creativity or who just always kind of puts things down and makes them feel bad. I always try to tell them to be really careful about who they share their work with, especially when someone's feeling very vulnerable about what they've written. I think the same is so true for this idea of kind of getting these shames off your back, of making sure the person that you're talking to is someone who is kind. And like Clarissa Pinkola Estes describes this person, someone who can listen fully, who can, she says, the person who can like shiver with you as you tell the story, but also someone who can stand, who won't collapse at, you know, through the experience of you sharing. So picking that person really is an important part of the process. And so for me, I found like therapists like that who I really trusted through the process of therapy and really was like, oh my gosh, okay, this person I can say things to and share and have a healing experience because I've shared it with them. And I would say that it's always just like this complete relief of kind of having something bottled up inside and just thinking you're the worst. Like there are all these stories. I feel like the vision I have is like this rock inside of you that gets like all this glommed stuff glommed onto it, like slime and barnacles and all this stuff gets attached to the rock, and then it grows and grows and grows. And it's like all these stories we tell ourselves. So there's the event that happened, but then there's all the stuff and the meaning we make of it and the pain we feel from it that's not really clean. It's not like a clean, true grief. It's more just like, oh, I hate myself when I think about this. And so it becomes this ugh, yuck. And then finding that person who you can talk to, telling them like, oh, here is my rock that I am tortured by in my life. It really can just free you. And like Clarissa Pinkola Estes talks about in the chapter, it opens you to the clean grief that needs to be felt. So it's not like easy. I'm not talking about an easy thing at all, but it is extremely freeing and cleansing. And when you get to just have the grief that was meant to be felt at the time, and then you get to walk into a new life. And it's not like these things ever really go away. Like the reason it's called Scar Clan, she says in the chapter, is because it forms scars. So you don't ever live your life without these experiences having been in your life. It's not like you do this to forget about them. It's more like doing it to just allow yourself to open up and cleanse and be a person who can walk through the world and have that scar, but that scar is no longer an active, festering wound. So it's like true healing that can happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think what has been really impactful for me is when you finally share, it's like somebody else carries the weight with you. And it's not so much that it's not even necessarily that it's like burdening them, but sometimes it just feels like, oh my gosh, I'm not the only one who knows this thing. And someone else can also be like a beautiful mirror for you, especially when it feels very, very shameful, that someone else can actually reflect a truth back to you. And again, this is like very much a trusted person. But that's been definitely the experience for me, is that when I've shared something that I've just been so afraid of sharing, and like, what is this going to make this person feel or think about me? And then to be met with compassion and tears in their eyes, but like steadfastness of like, I'm here with you. I'm experiencing this with you. And like, it's going to be okay. You know, like that's so incredibly powerful. One of the things that you were sort of alluding to in the beginning, and I think it's important to also mention, is that sometimes the secrets that we're holding is not, they aren't fully our own. And so they right. might have to do with family, or they might have to do with friends or something else that, you know, I've been in situations where I've been maybe not directly involved in something, but witness to something that feels sort of shameful. And I didn't do the thing, but maybe I didn't take an action that I wish I would have. And really it's somebody else's secret that this thing happened, but it's gotten lodged inside of me. Mm-hmm. And to be able to share that experience with someone else, there is like there's a freedom that comes from that of being like, okay, it feels a little bit lighter. And that experience always has, when it's been with the right person, there's been such a feeling of deepening of a relationship, of an intimacy that I didn't know was possible until I showed this other side of myself, and to still feel loved and accepted anyway. And I'm curious if this has ever happened for you, Emma, but like when you've shared something really, really difficult, when that person in turn says, oh my gosh, like that, something like that has happened to me too. Or I'd love to tell you actually this other thing that happened to me that I haven't felt safe to share before.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I've definitely had that experience. Well, I think people who are familiar with 12-step programs would find this very familiar, because it's actually a part of the 12 steps to do this. So this is the 12 steps, if you don't know, are really for people who are like, there's all sorts of 12-step programs, but it tends to be about addiction or codependency. And when you want healing from addiction or codependency, 12-step programs can really, really help. And the steps are a process that you walk through where this sharing of secrets is in like a very important step right in the middle of the process, where you have a sponsor who walks you through the 12 steps. So you never do the 12 steps alone. They say the only way to do the 12 steps wrong is to do them alone. So you have a sponsor, and that sponsor becomes that trusted person. And there's a step where you go through and you say, here's all the shit I've done wrong. Here's everything I've done wrong. Everything I feel terrible about. Ah! And also, here are all my resentments. Ah! Like this huge list. And so the sponsor's job is this: to sit. They listen. They shiver with you. They do all that. But then they do what you said, Caitlin, where they say, okay, and here's what I did. And it's usually like 1,000 times worse than whatever you've done. You're like, what? You did that? And then they talk about how they've come through it, how their sense of self has like become so much better over time, and what they've learned now. And so one of the things they say in 12-step programs is that like we don't regret the past, nor do we wish to shut the door on it or close the door on it. It's like this thing where you can walk through that and you no longer are just living burdened by the shame of the events, but you also know like, hey, this is my story. This is what I've learned. And then your job is to then do that for somebody else, like become somebody else's sponsor, sit and listen and say, hey, this is what I've done. And so that your experiences become like something you then share with others to help them in their healing mm-hmm. process. And I just think this is everything she's talking about in this chapter is exactly that process. So I've done that a couple times going through the 12 steps myself, and it is incredibly, incredibly healing.
Everything that you just shared really reminds me actually of the quote that I had picked out to share. And so I think let's just dive into those.
Yeah, let's do quotes.
All right, so here is the quote that I have. The way to change a tragic drama back into a heroic one is to open the secret, speak of it to someone, write another ending, examine one's part in it, and one's attributes in enduring it. These learnings are equal part pain and wisdom. The having lived through it is a triumph of deep and wild spirit. And I really love that. I think that just beautifully encapsulates so much of what we've been talking about, and especially what you've been sharing. And I think part of this process of really opening it up, it's almost like taking this thing that has we've hidden away and has been in the dark and shining light on it. And sometimes when we, you know, bring it out into the light, we gain a different perspective. And when someone else is a mirror to that, it's really powerful. And I think this part of where she says, you know, to examine one's part in something. So there is like a sense of, okay, what is my responsibility and what is there for me to maybe own? Mm-hmm. Maybe there's something I want to change or, you know, work on or improve within myself in the future. And then also, what is like badass about me that I made it through this experience, came out on the other side, you know, as actually a stronger person from having gone through this really, really difficult thing to overcome this shame and this pain and learned from maybe these mistakes that I've made in the past. I think that's so much of what she's really, you know, talking about is how it's like we come out like stronger on the other end if we don't keep these things, you know, hidden away forever.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like she's talking about like that idea again that the secret shame just like it doesn't go away, just like in the story. So it's not like if you ignore it, that thing no longer impacts your life. Like she talks about those emotional dead zones that it does impact your life, and the wild part of us, that instinctual nature, wants to live, that we want to have a full life. And so a lot of times what that means is, yeah, coming through and saying, okay, this thing happened, or this is what I did. I have shame about that. And to be able to kind of cleanse that wound and let it scar so that you can be this more powerful, yeah, badass person who's like fully alive in the world.
Beautifully said.
Okay, so my quote is from the very last section, which we haven't talked about yet, this section called the scapegoat. And this is an exercise Dr. Estes includes in this chapter where she says one day she had this idea where she wanted to make a coat out of all these things, all these shames, all these wounds, all these experiences. And so she stitched together like pictures and phrases, and she just made this physical coat out of everything. And she said doing that helped her to grieve and helped her to say, like, this is who I am. And so she suggests that as an exercise to women like us, women who are going through this and who want to become members of Scar Clan. And so I want to read this paragraph. So she says, at first, I made a scapegoat for myself. It soon became so heavy it needed a chorus of muses to carry the train. I had in mind that I would make this scapegoat, and then, having put all this psychic refuse together in one psychic object, I would disperse some of my old woundedness by burning the scapegoat. But you know, I kept the coat hung from the ceiling in the hallway, and every time I walked near it, instead of feeling bad, I felt good. I found myself admiring the ovarios of the women who could wear such a coat and still be walking four square, singing, creating, and wagging her tail. It actually brings tears to my eyes to read that, because it is. I love this. I think I just want to read that last sentence one more time, and that can be the wrap up of our episode. What do you think?
I think that's perfect.
Okay. I found myself admiring the ovarios of the woman who could wear such a coat and still be walking four square, singing, creating, and wagging her tail. Okay, thanks everyone for joining us today and talking about this kind of challenging topic of shame and outing our secrets. We love that you've been along with us on this journey. We only have two chapters left of Women Who Run with the Wolves. So this has been such an amazing project for me and Caitlin. And as we're nearing the end, it's like, wow, like the same thing. Look what we did. I'm feeling so proud of us, Caitlin.
I am too. This has been such a cool and challenging journey.
I know. So what we're going to do is, Caitlin and I, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to finish the book. After we're done with our usual book clubs and life schools, we're going to have a fun wrap-up episode, and then we're going to be taking a couple months off and then picking a new book to read to help us live with a full heart and a free voice. So we just want to let you know, as we're nearing the end, what we're going to be doing. And then we would love for you to come and join us in our Facebook group called the Full Heart Free Voice Podcast Community. We love hearing from you and just learning about what impacted you from the book, from our episodes. You can also do that by leaving us a review on your favorite podcast player. We've been reading your reviews and appreciate them so, so much. Okay, thanks everyone.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Emma Veritas and Caitlin Bosshart. You can find out more about me, Emma, at my website, wildauthenticity.com, where you can also download your free workbook, 3 Habits to Calm Your Fear and Get You Writing.
And you can find out more about me, Caitlin, at my website, caitlinbosshart.com, and on Instagram at caitlin_bosshart. The nicest thing that you can do for us is to subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast player.
To stay connected with us, join the conversation in our Facebook group, follow along with us on Instagram, and sign up for our monthly newsletter. You'll find all the links in our show notes.
A special thank you to the amazing artists whose music is featured in our podcast, Wally Ingram, Stevie Black, and Tom Freund. You heard portions of their tracks, Shine a Light and Who Do You Love, from their record Spa Day.
And thanks to Caitlin Bosshart for creating our beautiful cover art. And thank you to Kirit Basu for all his audio and technical help.
And a huge thank you to Emma Veritas for her editing magic. Last but not least, thank you to you, our listeners.